As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Bye, Talker Anchor. Salford Kings for a day. The definitive Phil Collins Pompey pun. And for Kevin Ellison, revenge is a dish served straight in your enemy's face. This is the Totally Football League show in association with Paddy Power. Hello, listener. Hope you're well. Matt Davis-Adams here to talk through all the big news and notes from the English Football League. Stan Parkin's been celebrating a big birthday this weekend, so he's rested this week. Happy 21st from all of us here, Sam. Adrian Clark retains his starting berth, though. Hello, Clarky.
Hello. Yes, I've welcomed Mr. Parkin into a very, very special and elite club where all the cool kids reside.
Yeah, and he will thank you very much for not naming that club. Michelle Owen's back with us once again, still coming down from Bristol Rovers, nil Wimbledon, nil on Saturday, presumably, Michelle.
The best thing about it was the varying weather and the great view I had over Bristol of the storms. That's the most I can say about that game for you.
All right, fair. Completing our lineup this week, a very warm welcome to former Leighton Orient gaffer Ross Embleton. Thanks for joining us, Ross.
No, thank you for having me. Just obviously devastated not to be on here with Sam, to be honest. I remember his time at Leighton Orient and then I bumped into him a few times around when I was at Swindon. So as you say, he's enjoying his 21st birthday.
It's been a brilliant opening 5 minutes for Sam. He's not even on the pod. We're going to get to our championship chat soon, but I wanted to start, Ross, by asking you a couple of questions. We're a couple of weeks on now from your departure from Leighton Orient, so the dust has settled somewhat. What's next for you, do you think? Is it management or back to coaching, ideally?
The answer is don't know. I think the great thing is when you say about the dust settling, you do realise that once a couple of weeks go by that people stop asking you all the dramatic questions and you can start to think like a normal person again. So I think for me, it's I've loved it. It's been a great experience. One, obviously being manager of Leighton Orient, a club that I followed as a kid, but at the same time, with all the jobs I've had in football, I'm quite open-minded. So I would love another crack at it. It doesn't have to be tomorrow. It could well be, you know, further down the line, but I think because I've coached all the way through my life, really, I'm open minded to various different opportunities within the game, really.
Yeah, because you spent quite a lot of time in youth football as well, haven't you? So that's an area that might potentially interest you in the future.
Yeah, and I think, look, it's obviously growing up as a coach when you haven't played, people potentially think about, you know, all you're going to do is sort of reach a certain level and limit within youth football. But for me, I've loved that part of my career, so it gives me plenty of opportunities to be willing to approach, really.
I'm sure you get straight back in, Ross. Look, it's a strange one, your dismissal, because it was going so well, wasn't it? It was going brilliantly. You were flying, you were punching, I think, above expectations, scoring a lot of goals. What happened in January? Can I just ask, did the goalpost change in terms of the expectations of the club? Because it feels to me like promotion would have been a bonus rather than an expectation.
Yeah, I think when we sort of set out, and this is not, you know, talking anything against the club, because I think the chairman's gone on record since I've left of stating the fact that they wanted to get into the playoffs. But our focus at the start of the year was to finish mid-table, preferably in the top half, and everything was about trying to improve on last year. So we felt we were on track to do that. And if I'm honest, probably looking back, getting to sixth, seventh in the league in and around Christmas has probably ended up shooting us in the foot. And we recruited well in January, but we also lost a few to injury. I've never used that as an excuse, so please don't think I'm trying to do that. But I think we recruited players very, very well, the three or four that we brought in. And we started to look forward, but we, you know, we hit a bit of a bump in the road. And I felt that that's what it was, a bit of a bump in the road. And we were probably where I thought we might be, maybe a little bit lower than I would have hoped. But we were excited about, or I was anyway, excited about the second half of the season. So I think, yeah, definitely the focus became on about the playoffs because we got ourselves into those positions that we did.
Well, Orient's loss is our game for today, at least. So you can relax now. That's the heavy grilling out of the way.
Thank God for that.
Right, we'll start our look back at the weekend's action in the Championship momentarily.
And they're off. The plucky youngster on the inside has started fast. Number 7 now, going down the outside. The big fella in the middle is racing to make up the ground. A late charge and across the line. Yes, the ball is across the line. Excellent header from the big fella. To celebrate an unbelievable week of racing and football, get a completely free £5 bet on Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday of Cheltenham and a £5 risk-free bet builder on Chelsea v Atletico Madrid. Paddy Power.
Max 1, £5 free bet per customer per day. Racing free bets available 48 hours before first race each day. Pre-match bet builder bets only. Minimum leg 2 plus. Max cash refund £5. If it loses, T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
This is the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Championship headlines. Aitor Karanka has been / will be / is currently being sacked by Birmingham after a less than stellar tenure with the Blues. On the pitch, Norwich keep up the good work. They came back from a goal down to beat Sheffield Wednesday. There's late drama in Cardiff as Watford go second and Barnsley win a 5-goal thriller at Bournemouth. 8 players currently plying their trade in the EFL are in the England under-21 squad for the upcoming Euros. Coventry are heading home. The Sky Blues have agreed a 10-year deal to return to the Rico from next season. And in less good news, Bradley Dack suffered what looked like another serious knee injury as Blackburn lost to Brentford on Friday night. And we're going to start our look back, though, on the South Coast, where Barnsley bested Bournemouth in a 5-goal thriller between the two playoff hopefuls. And Michelle, before we get to the game, Lewis Cook out for the season for Bournemouth. How big of an absence is he going to be for them?
Oh, massively. I mean, when I did the game against Cardiff and they'd had a few injury problems around there and sort of berating who'd been coming and going. But yeah, gutting for them. But I do think they've got other areas of quality to step in for him. They've got experience at the back as well, sort of going through the spine of the team. So as big a miss as he is, they should have players that can step in, like Billing, and if they decide to actually use Jack Wilshere at some point as well. So yeah, big loss, but they should, when you look at it on paper, they should have the squad depth, but not ideal at this stage.
Clarkie, what do you think gave Barnsley the edge in this game? Was it that half-time triple substitution, maybe?
It was a rocket, I think, from the manager. Some of the players spoke afterwards about being shocked at how angry Valerie and Ismail got at halftime, completely lost his temper and tore into the players. And sometimes you just need to do that. I mean, I'd be interested to get Ross's take on this, because obviously you want to be all about communicating properly and you want to get on with your players and you want it to be a harmonious environment. But every now and again, you've just got to smash the teacups and you've just got to lay into one or two players. No surprise that he made a triple sub. He does that when they're winning. So I don't think that was necessarily the spark, even though the players that he brought on did change the game in Morris, Kane and Styles. So yeah, it was a great reaction to that halftime berating. And you've got to give this guy some credit, because he had the confidence to leave out Daryl DK, who's been basically the Championship's biggest handful for the last month. And he rested him and brought him on in the second half. So it's another massive tick in the sort of Barnsley positivity box. They're doing the business on the pitch, and the gaffer continues to really impress.
The Barnsley positivity box. There you go, producer Abby. I think we've got the title for this week's pod. Ross, with a half-time ranting and rave, I guess the key is to kind of limit them, isn't it? Because otherwise they just lose their impact if you did that every week.
Yeah, I would always liken it to like the school teacher that you had that used to shout at you all the time. It's about having the impact. And I think, like you say there about substitutions and making making a point with those, leaving players out, especially in this current schedule that people are facing, it's important to get your timing right, isn't it, about when you leave your big boys out and give them a rest. But I think with the half-time rant, I think the days are gone of John Sitton getting people up against the wall and sacking people. But I think it's about being able to make the right noises at the right time. And like you said, you do it too often, it'll just drift.
There was a great stat in this game, Matt, that emerged afterwards. Basically, Bournemouth's matchday squad was worth £115 million. And that's more than Barnsley have ever spent in their history on transfers. So look, it's a great result for them, and it just keeps them rolling on. And the fact that they came from behind to do it they'll just be absolutely bouncing, won't they, at the moment, Barnsley? They don't seem like they're going to sort of crumble when the pressure is on.
So Bournemouth have got a stacked squad, Michelle. What have you made of Jonathan Woodgate's time there so far? He was unbeaten in his first four, but only two wins from the subsequent six.
Well, I think anyone playing Barnsley at the moment has got their work cut out. So that is something to be said. Unbeaten in their last 11 now. But you got to think, Bournemouth going into that game, we may not thought it a few months ago, but that was massive playing Barnsley, because they're both the two teams in contention for that sixth spot at present. If you're going to want to try and not lose a game, it's that one. The last time I watched Bournemouth play in person was the Cardiff game. And I thought they might have learned a few lessons from that game in terms of, I'm not saying Barnsley the most physical side, but Cardiff very physical that day. And when they got the lead, they held on to it. So I just thought I would have learned a few lessons from that game. I know Barnsley scored the win in the 80th minute. But it's a difficult one to answer. What do I make of Jonathan Woodgate? I'm not convinced he'll be there long term, because it's been a pretty mixed bag so far, hasn't it? Because they had that great win over Watford. But then this again is the cliche, well, I suppose, don't lose game if you're going for that sixth spot, which is really where they, Reading, Barnsley and Cardiff are all competing for those final two spots at the moment. But all credit to Barnsley. They were 7 points off the top six when they last lost the league game, and that was January the 19th. They are the form team on a run. So, tough one for Bournemouth to take, but I'm not that convinced on Jonathan Woodgate yet, sorry.
Just a quick one on this. What Barnsley are a nightmare to play against, with their sort of heavy pressing and the work rate and the tempo they play out, and they're very direct. They force other teams to change. And I think in this game, Bournemouth ended up going much more direct than they usually do. Probably lost a lot of rhythm because of that. And that's part of the Barnsley secret. It's not just about individuals, it's about being tough to play against. And they alter the way that their opponents play, which it's a big, big thing.
All right, next to the Cardiff City Stadium, where Mick McCarthy tasted defeat for the first time as Bluebirds boss after Watford snatched a late winner to beat Cardiff 2-1. 7 wins in 8 now for Watford. Ross, if you're the Watford manager, you kind of need runs like that, basically, don't you? Because you know the first sign of a bad one, you're going to be out the door.
Yeah, you do, right, you are. Yeah, you're always going to be looking over your shoulder, so it's nice. And I think the intensity that you're just talking about there from Barnsley, but the intensity that you see from Watford at the weekend showed that people are looking forward and confident in terms of, you know, where it can go and what they can obviously achieve. And I think the big thing I noticed at the weekend from that team was the amount of energy and pace that was in there. You know, it's coming up against an opposition like that, they're always tough to play against. A lot of similarities to what we were just talking about as well with Barnsley, in terms of a different way, but in comparison to the threat that Barnsley put towards you, that, you know, that pace and being able to get on the front foot really made a big impact for Watford at the weekend.
What about Cardiff, Michelle? 1 win in 4, is that a sign that they're tailing off? They got the big derby with Swansea next weekend.
Yeah, definitely had the new manager bounce, but even though it's only 1 win in 4, that was their first defeat by my reckoning, unless I'm not very good at reading, since the 20th of January, which was the final straw for Neil Harris. So it was Mick McCarthy's first defeat. And if you look back at the games they've played recently, Borough are a really tough side to play against. So a draw wasn't a bad result away there. They thrashed Derby 4-0. And you know, Dylan Phillips, the Cardiff City goalkeeper, I wouldn't want to criticise him too much because I think he's been fantastic for them since he came in when Smithies went off ill against Bristol City. He's kept his place, but there were some questions whether he could have done better with Messina's free kick. He said himself after the game he felt he could have saved it. But there's going to be moments like that. And I don't think they'd be too worried because, you know, only one defeat in that period is pretty incredible in almost, what, 2 months. That's good going. I saw some Cardiff City fans saying, oh, that's the end of our playoff push now. But it's too early. There's still so much football to be played. It's too early to say that. And they're 6 points off, again, how's your maths? 7 points off Barnsley in sixth now on the same game. So I can see why there could be a little bit of pessimism, but there's still so much to play for. And they're still playoff contenders at the time of recording. A massive, massive game against Swansea, who aren't actually playing that well at the moment. So it's a big opportunity for them at the weekend.
Sure is. Clark, you get the serious questions on this Cardiff-Watford game. Firstly, have we made enough for the fact that Watford have got a player called Philip Zinckernagel? And secondly, how cowardly was Francisco Sierralta at the end, legging it down the tunnel after he'd clocked Aidan Flint from behind?
Just an embarrassment. Yeah, just. I mean, that's supposed to be a big, strong centre half. What's going on? Mick McCarthy laid into him, didn't he? So he's got his comeuppance there. But yeah, Zinckernagel is a great name. They got a number of them though, haven't they? William Troost Eking at the back, Backman in goal. It's quite unusual. On that Dylan Phillips goal, obviously it was an absolute rasper, wasn't it, from Messina? But just Dylan Phillips did what all of us would have done and just dived out of the way of it, didn't he?
He's not meant to, that's the point.
That was a broken wrist territory, that was. On Cardiff, I think Cardiff will be all right. I actually really like the Murphy and Moore combo at the top. I think that's got a lot of potential. So it'd be interesting to see how they develop in the weeks to come.
Right, it is 24 minutes past one on Monday at time. I've just refreshed the Birmingham City Twitter page, but they're still wishing everybody a happy Mother's Day. So I don't think they're going to be confirming Aitor Karanka's departure within the next few minutes, but we are expecting it to happen. Blue Nose and friend of the show Ian Danter summed up the general mood of apathy amongst supporters with this tweet. What do I think? Shrug shoulders. It's a difficult situation, Ross. Karanka's not had a great start to his time there. People don't really like the football, but there are wider problems, aren't there? And you can have Pep Guardiola as your manager, but if the structure around the manager isn't right, then you're not going to get results on the pitch.
No, it certainly makes it very difficult. And I think what happens then is your style of play comes into question because you're not picking up results. I think you can smother over whether people like watching your team or not if you're picking up a few results or people can see some sort of progress. But certainly, like the structure around going into work every day as that head coach or manager, you need it to be as settled as possible, enable you to start getting those messages across. I think the other thing that I noticed was that he's managed that team without any fans in his whole tenure. And I think you look at certain clubs, I know someone like Millwall jumps out of that. Managing a club like that without your fans must be extremely difficult because they make a huge impact on that as well. So, like I say, the run hasn't been a great one for him, but as a Birmingham, as a player going to play against Birmingham, it would always be a fairly intimidating environment to go into. So I think certain clubs do lack that.
Yeah, definitely. Michelle, by the time people listen to this, Lee Bowyer might already have been announced as Aitor Karanka's replacement. What's he thinking here? He spent half his time at Charlton with one hand tied behind his back. They've got new owners, and now he's going into a situation which might be even worse than the one that he found himself at the Valley.
Maybe he just likes tricky situations. He likes to test himself. I don't know. I mean, when you say it like that, it seems really bizarre. But I saw the South London Press reporter Richard Corley had tweeted that Lee Bowyer had resigned as Charlton manager. We don't obviously have official confirmation yet, but apparently he told the players he was leaving. He was linked last summer, so maybe there's something in that. I'm just a bit confused, really, because you'd think that maybe it was going to be a bit more of a even keel at Charlton for him now. And from what's the saying? From the frying pan into the fire? It's just going to be a really another tricky role for him. But yeah, maybe he likes to test himself. And the other thing is, he's going into a job that, if he does take it, although Birmingham are just outside the relegation places at the moment in the Championship, Rotherham have all those games in hand in them, even more now following their COVID outbreak and delay. And I know Rotherham have to win those games, but he's going into a Birmingham side, if he goes, that have got some really hard fixtures coming up. You know, I probably wouldn't be in place for Reading on Wednesday, but Watford, Swansea and Brentford. You know, it's a huge task to keep them up. So I'm not quite sure what he's thinking. Something we definitely don't know, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's a strange one. Hey, Adrian, you lucky swine. You were at the home of the two-time European champions on Saturday. Give us a line on Forest versus Reading.
Well, it was much more exciting than anticipated. 38 shots in total, 23 of them from Reading. So Houghton wasn't quite as watertight as maybe I expected his team to be. Look, I was just shocked by Forest's low intensity. I've seen more life in training sessions than I had in the first 20 minutes. It was just a case of, were Reading going to step through the gears? And it actually took Forest to score a goal out of nowhere to really wake Reading up. And in the end, they piled on the pressure. They got the equaliser. And I think if the game had gone another 10 minutes, Reading would have won the game. Yeah, Forest wasn't blown away by them, I've got to say, mate. For Reading, they look way short of automatic promotion quality without the sort of guile of Ajaria and Swift in there. But they're good at what they do. And yeah, I think they've got a chance of probably sneaking the last playoff spot. But it might be a close run thing.
Now then, if the events of the last 12 months haven't convinced you that the apocalypse is coming, then this surely will. We actually won our midweek ACCA last week, so all the pressure piled on this week. The odds were 9-1, which meant Aztec, along with Paddy Powers, produced a payout of £100, which will be going to our charity of choice, that being Macmillan Cancer Support. Can we make it 2 from 2? Probably not. It's not going to stop us trying, though. My pick comes from the Championship. It won't surprise anybody to learn that I'm having Brentford to beat Derby. Abby, can you give us some odds on that, please?
Yeah, it will come as no surprise. Brentford 19-20 to beat Derby. But if you fancy backing the home side on this one, they are 3-1 with the draw coming in at 23-10.
OK, we'll keep going with that as we roll on. Now, you might be expecting League One to come next. You'd be wrong. We're off to Wembley for 2 slices of pizza / trophy.
Jason Lowe does the business. Salford City, a league below, but a cut above today. Please give me
a weekend for teams at Wembley, beginning with S. 2 games, 1 goal. Thrilling. Quick recap. The EFL Trophy final from last season was never played, so the EFL decided to host both on the same weekend in front of no supporters. But anyway, let's start on Saturday. Our special correspondent Sam Parkin was at Wembley to witness Salford's upset win over Portsmouth. We can hear from Sam now.
Salford thoroughly deserved the win, albeit on penalties. Portsmouth, 2 shots on target that I can recall. One of those in extra time. The 3 changes that Kenny Jackett had made at half-time had very little impact, and I thought that was telling in regard to the mood of the players, shot of confidence, lack of enthusiasm, and no morale, really, that I could see. The writing looked on the wall. They didn't improve after those changes. The system was odd in the first half. It was like 4-2-2-2. Zero width. It meant that Touré, in particular for Salford, had loads of joy down the left-hand side, put in some good deliveries. Harvey White and Ryan Williams for Portsmouth played completely tucked in. Wasn't completely understand what they were trying to achieve, but they couldn't play through Salford. Didn't make one chance for John Marquis throughout the 90 minutes. And Salford did create chances, stacks of them. Thomas Asante and Wilson were excellent, but the back three, incredible. Could see exactly why they are the best defence in League Two. So not a surprise what happened 24 hours later, because that was as bad as I've seen Portsmouth in a long time.
Ross, a word on the winners, Salford. They made light of the gap in the divisions between the two sides.
Yeah, I thought so. Salford are always a team that I'll look out from because I sort of travelled through the National League with them and obviously been back in the EFL the last few years. So always a team I'm keen to see how they develop. And obviously made a big change this year, didn't they, in terms of Graham Alexander going at a really interesting time. But I think it was obviously a change of style that they wanted. And you really see that at the weekend. I really like the way that they try to play. I think obviously it goes without saying. And they've got very good players for the level that they're currently at. But I thought they were very, very good first half, very comfortable. I think it levelled off a little bit in the second half once Portsmouth made the changes that they did. But to come out of it, the winners, I thought Salford deserved it, if I'm honest.
Clarkie, this is going to be the last time I'm going to get to say no jacket required for a little while. It's not a surprise, is it? Kenny Jacket removed after this. As Sam said there, they were poor and this has been coming for weeks, months, years.
Yeah, look, Ross brought up the fact that no fans have been inside stadiums. Portsmouth is another ground that can be really, really intimidating and loud. But maybe Kenny Jacket would have been relieved actually not to have been playing the last few games in front of a packed Fratton Park because it hasn't gone well. Lost six of their last eight. They've lost their edge. I mean, me and Sam were tipping them for promotion and everything's just gone a little bit flat. And yeah, it happens, doesn't it? I think sometimes you can look at the performances and say, are they playing for the manager? Have they lost belief in Kenny Jacket? And when you look at how flat they were, that is an easy thing to say. But those players have got to take responsibility as well. There's enough talent there to have beaten Salford, to have been much, much better of late. So they've got to buck their ideas up. And it'll be fascinating to see which direction they take. I see that Daniel Stendel and Neil Harris are the favourites. They would be excellent choices, in my opinion. But if Pompey are looking for a change in style and a bit more excitement, Stendel would be the choice ahead of Harris. I think Harris isn't that dissimilar to Kenny Jacket stylistically. So, yeah, I don't think he can have any complaints. But, yeah, fascinating to see what they do next.
Will has tweeted us at the Totally Show to ask whether Pompey should go for a permanent appointment now or an interim to take him through until the summer. Michelle, I guess it depends who they're going for, doesn't it? It's the quick answer to that question. If it's somebody in a job, you might have to wait until the summer. If it's Neil Harris, you can get him now.
Yeah, that's true, but it depends how much they want promotion as well. You just go out and get who, well, it depends on their financial situation, but how much they want to go up this season. They are only just outside the playoffs, so I think there's sort of two answers in that. Yeah, if the man they really, or the person they really, really want is out there and they have to wait till summer, they will. But then if they're that desperate for that promotion this season, you know, think how close they've gone the last couple of seasons. It's a tricky one.
So a day after Salford had won, Sunderland beat Tranmere by a goal to nil in the 2021 final. Lyndon Gooch with the only goal of not just this game, but the whole weekend at Wembley. Sunderland putting their curse to rest at last. It's their first win at the National Stadium for half a century. I guess, Ross, they'll be desperate for this to be their only trip to Wembley this season, given how they've fared in playoff finals past.
Yeah, without doubt, I think they're not going to win. I think we all remember the Charlton game, don't we? So it ends up becoming Sunderland become a club. When you hear stats like they haven't won there for 50 years, you wonder if they've been playing there every week. It makes it sound a hell of a lot worse than it probably actually is for them. But I thought it was a really even game. Really impressed with the way Tranmere go about it. What I like about them is Tranmere can accommodate most styles. They can go and have a right good go with you if it's a bit of a ding-dong type affair. And then if they need to play, they've got good enough footballers that can really go and impose themselves on the game. I found that out in the last game of my tenure, obviously. But I think they can do a bit of everything. And obviously Keith's a really experienced man in terms of the job that he does. So it's quite an even game. But the goal was a fantastic one. The pass to get him into score was outstanding for the one goal in open play over the weekend.
Yeah, it was a brilliant pass, wasn't it, from McGee? That one moment of quality. Just going back to Tranmere quickly, you've obviously seen them up close and personal. Would it be a surprise to you now if they didn't make automatic promotion? Because they've not been in the top three, I don't think, or hardly ever throughout the season. But it seems to me that they might just be the best team in the league at the moment.
I don't think it would be a massive surprise. We actually played them away, beat them 1-0 when Michael Jackson was still in charge. It was one of his last two or three games. And when Keith went in, I remember saying to my staff, like, they've got some really good players. They've got some really good players, real experience. And I touched upon there earlier about the way they can go about games, I think gives you a really good chance, as to me at all, if they run it very, very close and get themselves out of the division.
And just a quick nod, obviously, to Sunderland and Lee Johnson. He's temporarily had a pizza store named after him in Sunderland. It's called Papa Lee's instead of Papa John's. And apparently they sold out a pizza after the win as well. So there you are. Some good marketing.
Wonder if he has pineapple. We'll never know, probably. By the way, for more on Sunderland's win, head to The Athletic for Philip Buckingham's piece all about breaking the curse. If you're not already a subscriber, then use the promo code LEAGUESHOW to get all The Athletic goodness for just £4 a month for 6 months. That is £1 a week. Okay, back to our regularly scheduled League One roundup next.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football League Show with Matt Davis-Adams.
League One headlines. Lewis Potter keen to keep up Hull's winning ways. That's 5 on the spin for the Tigers, who have a 7-point buffer between themselves and the playoff pack. Rochdale stunned Lincoln to move off the bottom. Troy Parrott got on the score sheet for the first time in senior football as our pal Paul cooked up a first win. And speaking of Ipswich, Darren Drysdale free to referee again after being given a backdated ban after his clash with Ipswich's Alan Judge last month. Meanwhile, Swindon have signed veteran keeper and free agent Lee Camp until the end of the season. A shock result of the day saw bottom of the table Rochdale earn a sensational win at promotion chasing Lincoln. They came into this, Dale, on their longest goalless run for 40 years. It was a beauty from Ollie Rathbone to end that run. Sets them up for another tough game to come, Clarkey, against Peterborough this weekend, but this will give them a real shot in the arm.
Oh, massively, yeah. I mean, it was incredible that they'd gone on this sort of barren run, because that was their thing. Scoring goals wasn't an issue, was it, for Rochdale? They were banging them in for fun, just losing 4-3. So they'll be delighted to have sort of got back onto the goal trail. They were rock bottom of the form table. But this was no fluke. This was an outplaying, really, of Lincoln. They went to 3 at the back, 3-5-2, which hasn't been their stock formation this season. So that in itself is interesting for Brian Barry Murphy moving forwards. They should have had a pen as well. So yeah, it's a real confidence boosting win for Rochdale. And I think that battle at the bottom of League One is really interesting now, because Swindon are playing terribly and they're not looking good. Wimbledon are a bit devoid of goal threat, but everyone else seems to be in pretty good nick at the moment. So I think that battle for the bottom two spots in the relegation zone is going to be seriously contested, and I think Rochdale have a chance because they score goals, or they've remembered how to score goals.
What about Lincoln, Ross? Only 2 wins from their last 9 league games. We know they've got some key players out injured at the moment. Danger that they're just running out of gas at the wrong time.
Yeah, it's not a great thing to see for them, is it? I mean, they looked unstoppable, didn't I think, when I say surprise, I think they just sort of caught everyone off guard at the start of the season. But, you know, like I say, they looked unstoppable at one stage, but they seem to hit a bit of a snag, and then not being able to kick themselves in again. I think when you are missing key clientele or one or two important players, obviously does become very difficult to bounce back from. But I thought the 3 goals across the game were all really good goals, all came about in different ways, but 3 individual bits of quality off of a throw, off a knockdown and that sort of thing. But the bits of skill around the box for people to create the opportunity to score was outstanding. And I'm really pleased for Brian Barry Murphy. And you see that reaction from the players when the winner went in. It, there was a real collective lift. So I think, like you touched upon there, things like that are so important. That little bit of momentum, that little bit of togetherness that one or two others might not have, might just be the difference that lifts you out.
Definitely. Going back to Lincoln quickly, great recruitment as always, really, from Appleton. Rodgers scored that great goal. He looks a real talent. Just wanted to ask you about Michael Appleton, because he's been linked with the Sheffield United job, which would be quite the step up. But I know that people in the game do think highly of Appleton. What's your sort of opinion of him as a manager, a coach?
I've got a lot of admiration for him. I've bumped into him and met him a couple of times. And I think his teams always play good football, and I think exciting football. And I think, you know, without that being outrageously dominant on the ball, they are attractive to watch. They're attack minded. And I think that's probably what gives him that opportunity of looking further up the ladder. Do you know what I mean? He's not sort of a set lower league manager of, you know, play a certain way and that might be his ceiling and might turn bigger clubs off of taking him. And I think he's done some good jobs already in the past, and he's gone in there. And like you said, the recruitment and the way that they've brought players in, they've got some good young players as well. So it's not just like he's gone and got a load of experienced ones that are used to getting out of League One. He's taken a couple of young boys on loan and found a few gems. So I think he would certainly be of an appeal to clubs further up the ladder.
Elsewhere in League One, Doncaster Rovers drew 0-0 with Northampton, but since their managerial change, Andy Butler's taken up the reins and carried on where Darren Moore left off. We can speak with Andy now. Andy, not the result that you wanted on the weekend, so we won't spend too much time on that, but I wonder, how have you found it, and also what's the message from above been? Is it, you know, promotion or bust for the rest of the season, or is it just signs of improvement that the people in power are looking for?
Obviously not the result we wanted on the weekend, no, far from it. The players know what we've said to them, and we're going to move on from that. We can't dwell on it too much now, but as for my future, the club have said that if there's a progression and a pathway, then there's a discussion to be had in the summertime. So it's not all playoff and bust, it's hopefully the progression. Obviously I put the pressure on myself and the staff put pressure on me to get the results, but at the same time, as long as there's a pathway and a process there, then discussions to be had.
You were in charge of the women's team before you took this job. I wonder how much that's helped you make the transition into being a manager. It was probably invaluable, wasn't it? Having spent that time working with players already.
Yeah, well, it's something that I took a chance on with the Doncaster Bells. I was coaching with the academy for about 5 or 6 years, and the opportunity came up, and I thought, like I said, that the experience would be invaluable to where I want to go in the future. Obviously managing a team, the academies are all pretty well structured, and the philosophies and the syllabus is all set out, whereas I thought if I take the Doncaster Bells on, then it's my approach, my way, and see how it goes from there. And it's been a really enjoyable journey. The players have took on the board information ever so well. And we've got some good results. I think when we took over, we were second bottom, and as the league stands at the moment, we're second top. So it's been a good turnaround, but that's all down to the players' application and attitudes.
In terms of the men's team, some of your veterans been stepping up. I'm talking specifically, of course, about James Coppinger. How's it been managing somebody who's older than you? It's quite a rare thing in football.
It's fine. Copps is unbelievable. Role model and a professional. He leads by example, and he's always there for me to lean on if I need to be, and vice versa. We've been together, well, we've played together for quite a while now, and we know each other inside and out. So it's quite good to have a relationship with a player who, you know, you can trust and who's got your back, because I'm still learning the job and he's as well. So at the same time, if we can use each other's experience, because I've been around the game a long time as well, we hopefully comes well for both.
It's an incredible amount of experience that you've got in all sides of the game, but also not just within football. Reading up on you before, fingers in pies was the phrase that came to mind. You're a qualified referee and a locksmith, and things could have been very different had you not pitched up at Rovers. There was another change of career that you were preparing for.
Yeah, I looked to get into the police force. I'm also a level 2 plumber as well. It was just a career choice, and I had a bad injury, well, operations on my feet when I was at Huddersfield, and I went to Walsall at the time, and I just thought to myself, if football doesn't go well for me, how can I keep earning money for my family and I keep a mortgage paid, because football's not going to last forever. And I keep saying to the younger players, it's, you've got to have other avenues to exploit, when football runs out. Average career football is about 8 years. I've been lucky to have one for, I think, 16 years. So it's, I've been really, really fortunate. But no, it just, it came to a stage where I thought, where can I go? Where can I stay in football? So I looked down the refereeing pathway and got to level five refereeing from, level one was the top, but I got to level five, but I couldn't progress any further because they needed Saturday games, which I was busy on a Saturday, which was difficult. And then, no, just during the summer, it was tough. Like, it's tough for everybody. And again, just looking at ways I can get a job. The police force is something that excited me. I don't think I really want to sit behind a desk, even though I sat behind a desk right now. but no, a desk job. And so just, it's something different and something challenging. I love challenges in life, and it just seemed a challenge. So it was something I was looking at.
Yeah, excellent. Final question then. You've got Oxford tomorrow. They've not beaten anybody above them in the table yet. So that's going to be 3 points for you then, surely?
Well, you know, Oxford will be a tough game. Hopefully the run continues. But no, it'll be a tough game. Carl Robinson's got a very well-organised side there, and he makes them play attractive football. So it'll be a tough game. But again, we've got to impose ourselves onto the game and come out the other side with a positive performance. If you get a positive performance, then the result will follow. I keep saying that to the players, get the performance first and result will follow. And we've got a good squad here as well. So it's about imposing ourselves on that game and getting the right result for Doncaster Rovers.
Well, we wish you all the best with tomorrow's game and for the rest of the season. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today, Andy.
No, thank you very much. Thank you.
Andy Butler, Doncaster Rovers manager there. Michelle, anything you'd like to say about the 0-0 between Bristol Rovers and Wimbledon that doesn't relate to weather?
No, apart from on Mother's Day morning, my little boy came into our bedroom with my husband, and now I have a Joey Barton book to read. So I can find out about the inner workings of the new Rovers manager and find out why we have to wait so long for post-match. Did I say that? Sorry. Okay, let's move on.
Excellent. Right, let's carry on building this midweek echo with the help of Paddy Power then. Ross, your selection comes from League One.
Yes, I went to watch MK Dons last week, and although they got beat against Blackpool at home, it's two teams, I think, MK Dons against Plymouth, two teams that like to dominate the ball. I like watching both of them. Respect for both managers, different stages of their career, but I'm going to back MK Dons to beat Plymouth at home.
Abby, what are the odds on that, please?
They are the favourites, MK Dons, 10 to 11 to win this one, Plymouth 27 to 10 with the draw 5 to 2.
Lovely. We'll complete the accolade at next up, League Two.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
League Two headlines, the top six all won, keeping Cheltenham top of the pile. Grimsby and Southend remain in the bottom two after both were held to goalless draws. And old player story of the week, 42-year-old Kevin Ellison got on the score sheet for Newport this weekend and celebrated by shouting in the face of his former manager, Derek Adams. Paradoxically, Newport have condemned the online abuse suffered by their manager, Mike Flynn. We're going to start there with the League Two game of the day from the weekend. Cambridge keeping themselves in the automatic promotion places after coming from 2-0 down to beat Oldham 4-2 in Keith Curl's second game as Latics boss. Davis Keller Dunn, always good to get Davis in there, missed a pen for 3-3, having wrestled the ball off his teammate because he was on a hat trick. This is not the kind of thing you want to see, Ross, from your players, presumably. And we've seen it quite a lot in recent weeks. We saw it at Hull, didn't we? What was that, a fortnight ago? It seemed to be catching.
Yeah, and it makes things uncertain when they don't need to be, do they? You know, you tend to you tend to have your decision made and those things set in place. And a penalty is such a pivotal, obviously, is such a pivotal moment in the game. So I think to cause that disruption and leave yourself in that vulnerable position, it's just something that I don't think you really need to, a line you don't really need to go down. So makes it very, very difficult and causes even more pressure on a big moment, a turning point in the game at 3-2 to the player that's brought that pressure on himself.
Michelle, Keith Curl mentioned him. He's the new man in. What are your thoughts on his appointment as the successor to Harry Kewell?
Time will tell is the old cliche, but
that's not a ringing endorsement there, Michelle.
Well, it's just what happened at Northampton recently. I was surprised to see him sort of straight back into work, you know, quite soon, really. It was about a month ago that he left Northampton. They were 23rd and they had just 6 wins and 20 goals, I think. So, I don't know. I'm sure he probably interviewed well. And I mean, Oldham, they look okay, don't they, to stay up unless they really capitulate. I mean, yeah, his deal's to the end of the season initially. So I guess just see where they go, steady the ship and see if he wants to stay on. And they want him to stay on from the end of the season, really. I guess that's why. It's probably a reasonably safe appointment, reasonably safe pair of hands just to keep them up mid-table where they need to be.
Yeah, and the Oldham website certainly doing the best to boost his ego. The 57-year-old mastermind, I think they meant masterminded Northampton's promotion from Skybet too. Adrian, you and I...
Would you, Ross, back in the day, did you ever get that shout?
Not 57.
Yeah, not the, yeah. Thank God for that. No, not that I'm aware of, anyway.
Adrian, you and I are in trouble with our old pal Joe Crilly. He wants to know where all the Bolton love has gone on this podcast this season. 8 wins and 2 draws in the last 10. The latest victory at Port Vale on Saturday. We've spoken about Ian Evatt not always in a positive light this season, but he seems to have found the winning formula.
Yeah, Bolton fans had to be patient, didn't they? They made so many signings in the summer that I think it was all just a little bit too disjointed. They didn't really know what sort of team they were. Ian Evatt had his ideas and a very clear identity, but it's taken a while for the players to sort of grasp all that he wants and to become a team. But we've seen that over the course of the last sort of 11, 12 games. I think over 11, they've won 9 and drawn 2. The key, and Joe Crilly will know this, our good pal, is clean sheets. 7 of them out of the last 11. They're a different side now to the one that was sort of spanked 6-3 by Port Vale. This one couldn't have been any different. Going to Vale Park, bad pitch, scrappy game. But they, you know, they toughed it out and won 1-0. And they found themselves a partnership at the back. I think that's key. Ross will know this, I think. If you can get a centre-back partnership that has good chemistry and you can play them week in, week out, that's the sort of foundation to build around. And Ricardo Santos and Alex Baptiste are in a good groove at the moment. And so that's given them the platform to win games. And look, we know who they got up top, Owen Doyle and others, Nathan D'Alfonso, etc. So, yeah, Bolton, from nowhere, look definite playoff contenders now.
Ross, your Orient thrashed them 4-0 back in October. We mentioned Bournemouth and their big budget earlier. Is that kind of an extra motivation for Orient players when you come up against a team who've spent big money and probably earned big money as well?
Big time. But I think what we found when we got that result was it was a team in that transition. I don't know if that's the right word, but it was that team at that stage that you could see where Ian Evatt was trying to get his team to. His Barrow team played really good football, 4-3-3, and they didn't look like they quite knew where they were or where they were trying to get to and hadn't quite established that yet. So we felt we could catch them cold a little bit and build on that uncertainty. I don't think anyone thought we'd beat them 4-0. But it certainly does give you that little edge because it's Bolton. Ultimately, Leighton Orient playing against Bolton is obviously a massive occasion, whether there's people in the stadium, whether it's in League Two or any, you know, in a cup game in the past when you would have come up against them. So it certainly adds a little bit of an edge to it. We had Connor Wilkinson at the time, who was an ex-Bolton player, so he certainly had a point to prove. So a lot of things sort of worked in our favour and we caught them like that. But what I did start to see is the change. They beat us at home not so long ago as part of this run that they're on now. And You see that they were a lot more solid. They were starting to really find a way of playing. And like you just touched upon there about the two boys at the back, I think that was the early stages of that partnership, but they looked really comfortable, both very good in possession, but very good defensively. And obviously Santos is obviously a big, strong boy, so he can cope with the other side of League Two football as well.
Excellent. Let's finish off this ACCA then before we go. Michelle, your selection comes from League Two.
Yeah, I've gone for Cheltenham to beat Barrow, although Barrow have had a couple of decent results lately. Still fancy Cheltenham, top of the table against 22nd.
Clarkie, you've also gone for a League Two game.
I have, yeah. When I picked this out, I kind of forgot that Tranmere had been involved in Wimby actually.
Getting your excuses in, what, way more than 24 hours in.
But look, I'm going to stick with it because I think they're a good team. We've explained that earlier on in the show. They've just run Sunderland really, really close at Wembley. They go to Grimsby, and Grimsby, look, they're the bottom team in the EFL. They're really struggling to score goals. There's a little bit of improvement from them in recent weeks, but I think there's a gulf in quality between the two sides. So even if they are a little bit knackered from their exertions at Wembley, I still think going from Sunderland to Grimsby will be a welcome change for them, and I think they'll win the game.
Abby, let's get some odds on those two games, please, and what it does for the ACCA.
Yeah, so those are two of the three odds on results in League Two that Paddy Power have put for the midweek action. Start with Cheltenham. They are 3-4 to beat Barrow. Barrow 15-4. And with Clarkie's pick, Tranmere are still the favourites. They play on Wednesday. They are 19-20 with Grimsby 14-5. And it will come as no surprise that the 24-hour champions of the Pizza Cup are the other favourites, the other odds on in League Two. Salford are 8-13 to beat Colchester. But back to the ACCA, what does it all mean? Well, put that all together, we are looking at 12-1 for this week's accumulator. A little bit longer odds than last week, but I have faith now that we've got one, we can get them all.
Last question of the show comes from friend of the show, Robin Cowan, who asks, was anyone else disappointed Nigel Pearson didn't have the sleeves torn off his puffer jacket? Didn't recognise him with his arms covered. Michelle, you're our Bristol City correspondent. What did you make of Big Nigel's sartorial choice?
Oh, he's an absolute fashionista, isn't he? We'll see what he's wearing. Where are they? Oh, Blackburn on Wednesday. Think I need long sleeves for that.
Ross, what's your stance on tracksuit versus suit on the touchline? You like to mix it up a bit, or are you firmly in one or the other camp?
No, firmly tracksuit baseball cap. But so, to be honest, when I look around at myself sometimes on the sideline, I look like I've raided the club shop, if I'm brutally honest. But no, I'm not. I haven't got good enough clobber to wear a suit or go for smart casual. So I'll stick to the club tracksuit. It's a lot easier that way.
Cut from the Tony Pulis cloth, eh, Russ?
Something like that. Yeah, something like that. Some people refer to me as Russell Slade instead. I'm not sure what one I'm happier with.
Well, with either of those two, if the cap fits, you know, literally. Right, that'll just about do it for us for this week. Ross, many thanks for coming on. It's been a pleasure. We'll have to have you back soon.
Appreciate you having me on. Thanks very much.
Clarky, Michelle, many thanks to, and to producer Abby. She'll be back with George and Ali for Extra Time on Thursday. We'll meet again, same time, same place, next week. Until then, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and by following at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of the Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Totally Football League Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
Finding it difficult to get off to sleep? Well, you are not alone. After a long day of Zoom, doom, and gloom, it's hard to relax and just drop off. Maybe you need a bedtime story. I know, there's a lot of them out there. They ask you to imagine that you're laying on a lily of contentedness, drifting upon a lake of calm, holding hands with the otter of placidity. R1 isn't like that. It's a football bedtime story, and it sounds like this.
When Brian Clough arrived at Nottingham Forest in January 1975, they were a mediocre provincial club whose most recent success was winning the FA Cup in 1959. But they were 13th in the old second division now. Clough, too, was damaged goods.
So give it a go tonight. Subscribe to Football Bedtime Stories on your favourite podcast provider now.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.